This show is part of the RetroZap.com podcast network.
This is Warp Trails, a Star Trek Discovery podcast, a RetroZap podcast network exclusive.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Warp Trails. If you are new to our show, this is the RetroZap podcast network show devoted to Star Trek. I'm your host, Dennis Keithley, and with me is my wife and most favorite Star Trek fan, who is also my co-host, Beth.
Good evening, everyone.
So tonight we are continuing our coverage of Season 2 of Discovery with a discussion of the most recent episode, which is Perpetual Infinity.
Yes.
And this starts off with a flashback. Michael is a 10-year-old. She's back on Doctari Alpha, and this is in the days preceding the supernova that she wanted to see.
Yes.
And so they're just kind of, it's a family moment, really. They're getting dinner ready, and now we're kind of have some details filled in with the Red Angel suit here. And so Michael goes to look in her telescope and she sees a bright light, and at first they dismiss it. And then she says, well, it's getting closer. It's landing. And
right.
It turns out to be the Klingon
ship. Yep.
And so Burnham gets shoved into the closet, and then, her dad is going to fend off the Klingons as best he can.
Mm-hmm.
And, we come to find out that her mom, her plan was to go back into an hour into the past and then get them away before this could happen.
Right.
And then she wakes up.
Yes.
So, to me it seemed like I could see why Michael wouldn't have remembered anything about the Red Angel here, but it did seem to be a little bit of childhood selective memory, perhaps, with this scene, because it seemed like there was enough of an indication with there being a lab right there and everything else going on that I guess she just wasn't asking questions, or she maybe didn't understand what was going on around
in
the home.
Yeah, I don't know that she ever saw it as red. I don't know how many times she actually saw it with the wings extended. I mean, Michael could have only seen it as a suit.
Right, but in the prior episode when Leland is confessing that he's the one that's responsible, she denied that they were involved in any type of experiment like this at all. I mean, you know, her dad was a xenobiologist and one of them was an astrophysicist. I mean, it was, you know, that they could be involved. You know, this was just completely outside her scope of possibility.
Right.
So anyway, but then Michael wakes up and she's in sick bay. And when Dr. Culber and others gather around, she saying, yeah, okay, that was really me. That was the Red Angel. That was not my mom. And Culber says, no, that was really you. And then they did kind of what did you think of the explanation that the cellular mitochondria can be very similar between mothers and daughters, and that is why the match came up?
That's why in the last episode he was 100%. It was 100% a match.
100%, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. I would have almost preferred that he just say, I messed up. Or, you know, I guess there was something wrong with the data. I did not need some excuse as to why it was true. Why we're supposed to believe it's medically something as opposed to just the writers trying to pull a double cross.
Yeah, I really wish they hadn't used that 100% line in the past episode. And, you know, they're is, I think, a bit of that happening from an episode-to-episode basis, that they kind of miss these super strong statements about things. I can't put my finger on another specific example, but they say something like that, and then the next episode, they backtrack it a little bit. You know, they walk it back a little.
Right.
That, you know, oh, here's how we made that mistake or whatever. And there's some of these things that I can forgive because, you know, it may just be a simple matter of interpretation, but he was 100% certain this past time, like you just said. And so that did kind of bug me too. But, you know, I almost prefer they just didn't even address it at all. That they had just said, you know,
yeah,
that was my mom. Yeah, that was your mom.
Yeah.
How is that possible? Now, that aside, Michael's reaction to the, you know, the disbelief.
Yes.
It was, you know, I can only imagine when you believe your parents been dead for 20 years, you know, what that must be like.
Yeah, no, this is one of several very well acted scenes in this episode.
Yeah. Burnham gets a lot of these type of reaction shots this season. And then number two and number three would be Stamets and Culber. They get a lot of those opportunities to have that stunned disbelief
look. I was going to say to look massively confused. And we all go, yes, we feel you on this.
They've kind of perfected the shock and reaction shot.
Yes.
So, you know, Michael wants to go see her mom, but she can't because she received a massive dose of tachyon particles and the conditions that she was in on the planet. You know, she had been asphyxiated and dead for a minute when she got revived. So Culber forbids her from going down. But then Spock shows up and hands her files that Stamets has pulled from the Red Angel's suit. It's like almost 900 mission logs or so, I believe.
Yeah, 841 is what my notes say.
Right. And so she gets to start going through those. So then we get this shot, which kind of picks up on one of the things that we ended our last episode on, which is some of these theories about control and what was going on with Leland.
Mm-hmm.
And he is strapped to a table or a gurney or something like that, upright, and he's looking at a hologram, which is clear of Burnham, but it's clearly control talking to him.
Yes.
And it's basically saying that it learned how to impersonate Vulcans flawlessly when it took over, when it dispatched with Pitar.
Mm-hmm.
And then with Arium, it's picked up additional abilities in that department. But what it can't do is mimic flesh and some of those other reactions. So it needs a body. And it clearly intends to take Leland over, which it does. It sends some sort of a probe up behind him and injects him in the back of the head with what looks like nanoparticles and nanobots. And you had a very strong reaction to this.
Well, I think there are a couple of things. How did he get strapped to the board is my question.
Mm-hmm.
This is petty. This is a petty little question.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one from the Section 31 ship was ever looking for him. Is control working with some other person who strapped him to the board?
Was it that probe that maybe pulled him over there and somehow managed that?
Yeah, I don't
know. I mean, that I could buy as a reason. I mean, I had the same reaction, but then I remember that, you know, that probe did show up and it had multiple appendages. So I'm thinking maybe that might have been the answer.
I don't know.
Because the control was able to manage an awful lot of things with that ship we saw in the prior episode. One, it's injected him with something in the eye, which knocked him out. And then it impersonated his voice over the intercom. And then this episode, it was controlling the probe. So that one I can kind of look past.
But my big thing was, you know, the struggle is pointless. Like, all our little Borg lights are supposed to be blinking and flashing and screaming at us. And I'm going to be very disappointed if control is somehow the start of the Borg. Because this season has been Section 31 is behind everything evil in the entire universe.
Well, at least with this AI that wants to wipe out all life in the universe. But I don't see this as the Borg, because the end result is all sentient life gets wiped out. Whereas the Borg are trying to assimilate all sentient
life. I'm hoping it doesn't happen. I'm hoping that's just sort of a nod and it doesn't become it. But I do think we were all supposed to think Borg, and it worked. I thought Borg.
I didn't until you pointed it out. But the similarity is definitely there. You know, I think the other thing we have going, you know, again, just backing up this point, the other thing we have going against this is that the Borg actually appeared in the Enterprise show, which takes place prior to this in the continuity. And so we know the Borg are already out there.
I guess that's true.
Now, in a show that a season that's got so much time travel, I suppose it's theoretically possible that the control could then go back in time is altered from, because it, you know, especially with the way this episode ends, that, you know, that it goes back in time and that's how the Borg start, but they come from a entirely different area of space as well. What, the Delta Quadrant?
Delta Quadrant, yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting. I think you're right. We were deliberately supposed to think something about the Borg, but I just can't see that actually be where they end up. it seems like a little bit too obvious a telegraph in this situation.
Like I said, I bit, dear Discovery. I'm hoping I'm wrong.
Okay. But so, of course, Control wants the sphere data, and that's what it needs in order to achieve consciousness and wipe out all sentient life in the galaxy for whatever reason it needs to do that. Definitely getting a Terminator vibe.
Yeah, there definitely is.
Yeah. So Michael begins reviewing the Red Angel mission logs, and I guess her mother's name is Gabrielle.
Yes.
But instead of going back an hour in time, she got sent 950 years in the future. So the technology was imperfect. And we did get a shot of her having to use some sort of a glove to like collect the time crystal that was in her lab.
Yeah, that was cool.
And put it in the back of the Red Angel. And then when she went time traveling, she ended up in the future. She's floating in the middle of space. She was in the middle of her lab and she ended up in space.
Mm-hmm.
So is that because the planet has moved, the planet is gone? Or did she, I don't think this was made clear. Or did she go someplace else in space entirely?
That was not made clear. I took it to mean that the planet was no longer there, but there was, that was not confirmed.
Right. And then we get a lot of, you know, kind of background with all these mission logs. And, you know, she, at one point she ends up on Earth and it's ash. Mm-hmm. All life has been destroyed. And she remarks that, you know, a number of other planets that she's visited are wiped out. And she, so she's trying to figure out how to stop Control, which we know at this point. I mean, it's to extent it hasn't said explicitly, it's easily inferred, especially with the crew discussions. But the problem she has is every time she travels back to the present, she gets snapped back to 950 years in the future because she's anchored there.
Right.
And I don't think they adequately explained why that is.
No, I think that's probably one of the things that's going to, I'm hoping maybe we'll get touched on in the last couple of episodes, that what is significant about this 950-year spot in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, maybe there's no, it's just her, and so it's quote-unquote safe for other sentient life to be playing in that portion of the future, so maybe that's where the final battle against Control is. I don't know.
Right. But, so, you know, that kind of becomes a key element of this show, that she keeps snapping back to that time. Leland is now got has been taken over by Control, and he shows up on the bridge of the Section 31 ship. I wish they'd give the ship a name.
Yeah, as opposed Section to 31 ship.
The Section 31 ship. And he tells Ash and Georgiou that the mission's changed, that the trap that they set up was when they believed that Michael was the Red Angel, but now that it's her mom, essentially all bets are off, and now that they have to get the spheres data that Control is after, because they're better off protecting it than Discovery is, because it's a, you know, as Georgiou points out, if Burnham's mom Gabrielle is a Trojan horse, then Discovery is woefully underprepared. Did you buy that?
I thought Control Leland made an excellent case. If you want it. Like, I mean, Control Leland is lying, we know.
Mm-hmm.
But Control, and I'm just going to call him Control Leland until
I get a better name. That's actually a good way to designate him, yeah.
So Control Leland basically says, I saw this woman's dead body.
Yeah.
There's no way that woman can be the same.
Right.
So therefore there's something wrong, which I thought was interesting. I did feel like the whole time Georgiou was suspect. I think even our 11-year-old.
Ash was suspect, too.
Ash was suspect, too, for sure. But I think Georgiou was playing along.
Yeah, she was suspect this entire time. The objection I had to this, and Ash picked up on it, was, okay, wait a minute. You want me to engage in espionage against another Federation starship? That right. makes no sense.
Well, yes, okay. Let's say we believe Control Leland. So, right, you don't want to go to Michael Burnham and say, we think your mom is an evil clone. But we could go to Captain Pike and say, we don't know what she is. We're a little confused as to what's going on. We should take the probe information and get it out of here. Like, there's no reason to just steal the information from Discovery.
Right.
When there's 8 or 9 legal and clean ways to do it.
Well, we need to better secure the data. I kind of like the way it was played, because he came up with a reason that it was on its face plausible, but at the same time, Ash and Georgiou objected to this procedure, although that they saw the necessity of something being done.
Mm-hmm.
But then Pike ends up going down and talking to Gabrielle because she's regained consciousness. And Culber reports this to Pike and Burnham while they're on the bridge. And Burnham's all set to go back down to the planet. And Culber says, no, I'm sorry, Commander, but she said Pike only.
Yep.
And so he goes down there and has a very tense conversation. One, she says, I know about where you end up and you're not going to like your future. So I can't tell you anyway, which is a interesting foreshadow to what we know happens to Pike.
Especially, and I really liked Gabrielle.
Yeah.
Like she was well acted. I thought for what we got of her, she was extremely well developed. I sensed her commitment to the mission. I sensed her commitment to her daughter. But Pike's like, hi, I'm Captain Pike. And she's like, I know who you are and your future is awful. It's like, okay.
Yeah, she was intense. And she's trying to impress upon him the necessity of getting rid of this data so that the AI control cannot get it. And, the other thing that's key here is he says, he starts asking about the red signals.
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't know anything about the red signals.
Right.
Which is really weird because later, at one point in this episode, she remarks how she couldn't keep the sphere out of the AI's hands. And so she engineered a way to get the sphere to put Discovery in its path
mm-hmm.
so that it would get the data. Is it a way to try and keep it out of Control's hands? But, the signal's been involved in all these incidents. And so
there was a lot that confused me with that because so she can manipulate time, but not really, or she can get to certain places, but not really.
But my question is then where are the signals coming from? If it's not her.
They're her dad.
Well, I don't think it's her dad, but I'm beginning to wonder, as we get towards the end of this episode and, everyone's redoubling their efforts, can't help but wonder if this is not going to be Discovery's solution to send these signals back, if it's not Gabrielle, to get them to where they need to go, because I don't know exactly how that'll work, but I feel like we've got a problem that has yet to emerge that ends up with the signals.
How many single signals have we seen?
We've seen three of the seven. Yeah.
And one, we know from the super spoiler alert for the trailer for next week, we know we see the fourth.
Right. So there's four to go, including next week's. But she says you got to destroy it, and she wants out so that she can have something to do with this. Pike won't release her from the containment field that she's in. And the other thing that's going on is that as long as she's in this containment field, she can't get pulled back instantly to 950 years in the future.
Right, which is destabilizing the planet.
But yeah, she's on borrowed time at this point. The amount of energy it's taking to keep her there is ridiculous. And what is it? The laws of physics about equal and opposite reactions, and how Tilly pipes up about how that's her second favorite law and she's carrying on the bridge before Saru cuts her off.
Yeah. I wish we had seen more of Tilly in this episode. It was also interesting to me, and I'm not enough of a physicist to know, but my limited understanding of Newtonian physics is that while the laws work, there's massive assumptions that are not true, throughout the universe, which is why Newton's not wrong, but Einstein's more correct. And I thought it was interesting that in space, where gravity is a little weird, we were trying to do the for every reaction, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
Sure.
I had no problem with it. It was like, oh, it's interesting we're doing... Really, my thought was, oh, it's interesting that we're doing Newtonian physics.
Okay.
I know. But it was nice to have Tilly there. I wish she'd gotten more time.
Right. They've now got this plan to delete the archive. Saru is appalled. Says that it is, it's the mission of Starfleet to preserve information like this, that getting rid of this information would like burning down the library at Alexandria. Yeah. And, can't do that. But Burnham, makes a strong case that it's either that or we risk it falling into the hands of control and then everyone gets wiped out. So they're going to have to get rid of it. The problem is it doesn't work. As soon as they try to start delete, I mean, Saru accepts it when Pike says, no, we're going to have to do this.
No,
his duty.
There was not a second when I thought this was Saru trying to trick anybody into keeping it. Like, Saru legitimately tried, it legitimately didn't work.
Right. And so he's starting to delete the data, and then the archive itself starts putting up firewalls, and they are written in a language that's been extinct for 1,000 centuries, as Burnham puts it. So they have no shot at overcoming the firewalls.
Right. Do we want to talk about Ash and trying to steal the data?
Okay, now, I was going to ask you about that, because he kept thumbing this device, and it wasn't clear to me at the time what he was doing. We kind of get a better idea later.
Yeah.
But the... And, you know, that's when the... Later, when the similar device is being used, it's because the data, it's being transferred, and it was designed to intercept it. There's nothing being transferred here. It's getting deleted. So I wasn't sure how this device was supposed to work. He presses the button to start. The data won't get deleted, so he stops. And if he was really trying to steal it out of that system, what does it matter if it won't get deleted? I mean, you know, why is it he still not trying to steal at that point? He ups and changes his mind.
Right.
But that was not a well-explained moment, in my opinion, for this episode. And I really like this episode overall. I just think, as you can tell from our conversation here, there was just a couple of moments that needed a little bit more development. And considering that this episode was less than an hour, they really did have a few more minutes to play around with, that they could have added some of these little explanations in that would have cleared things up.
Yeah. No, I think what we're supposed to see is Ash being conflicted with his Section 31 mission and moving, you know, he's not going to... reclaiming his moral compass, I guess, for want of a better description.
Yeah, and I like that. I like him a lot better, as opposed to being up in the face of the Discovery crew about Section 31's mission, even though he doesn't agree with their methods. He's now come back to the center a little bit on this, which is, okay, the means are completely unjustified here. You know, why are we committing espionage on another Federation ship? And this does not feel right. I can't do it. I'm calling it off. So he reports that back to Leland, that he's not going to do it.
Right.
And Leland covers by saying, okay, well, good call. Keep me informed.
Which, if you were Ash, and that was the conversation you had...
Oh, major red flag.
I'd be like, what? Because, yeah, Ash is like... So how's that for my no? And Leland's like, you're right. Excellent job.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so Burnham then heads down to the planet to talk to Gabrielle. And Gabrielle, she can't deal with this moment. I mean, that was my take on this immediately. And she says, this isn't happening. You know, she is trying to do the same type of stuff that Burnham did to Spock so long ago, which is say things to get her to go away, to shut her out. Because she's not prepared for this emotional moment. She can't be there. She's got to deal with this control situation.
Mm-hmm.
And she can't get emotionally invested with her daughter right now and get distracted from her mission. That was my take. What did you think?
Yeah, that was my take too. I mean, at one point she said, I mean, she says, I think it to Pike, but she says that you're a ghost to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that everybody is dust. And yeah, it was very, the first scene between Gabrielle and between the doctors, Burnham, I guess, is Michael? No,
I guess doctor.
So between doctor and Michael Burnham, was very similar. And I think it was supposed to be. I think we're supposed to see those similarities. I think we're supposed to some extent, acknowledge that even Michael sees it and kind of understands.
Oh, yeah. She throws it right in her mom's face. Because, you know, when her mom says, you know, talks about Michael's stubbornness, Michael says, where do you think I got it from, Mom? I liked Burnham's attempts to get through to her mom. It's like, you know, I've read your logs, and you know, Dad and I were your driving force. Getting back to us is what kept you going. Now, this just occurred to me. Michael's dad, did he not die? Because if Dr. Burnham, Gabrielle, is trying to get back to him and Michael, she would have to do it by going back in time prior to the Klingons arriving. Because otherwise, you know, Mr. Burnham would be dead already.
Yes.
So,
unless, no.
Are we going to get that pulled out on us at some point?
I mean, I don't know. Possibly. I don't know how you're going to do it. I mean, I guess theoretically what you could say was when the Red Angel suit activated, there was enough of a time, you know, away from the time crystal that maybe did something to Burnham's dad, but that Burnham was protected from insert Star Trek science here.
Well, I wasn't necessarily thinking that.
Oh, okay. So
it's just the idea being that we don't know exactly, the part we still haven't seen is the discovery that Michael's parents were dead. We have it, a report that they were killed by Klingons on Doctari Alpha. And we've now seen the scene where the Klingons arrive.
Mm-hmm.
But now we get the information about how Gabrielle got away
right.
in the Red Angel suit. But we never saw Mr. Burnham actually die.
I'm going to assume Papa Burnham is dead.
Well, I am assuming too. But again, the line is that you were trying to get back for us. And so, you know, now granted, that's also Burnham saying it. But right. I'm just a little confused and maybe I'm reading too much into this, and I most likely am. But it seems like they've left themselves with this out with these lines that it is possible that he survived as well. And Section 31's got him locked up somewhere working on similar technology or something like that.
Sure. I mean, yes, I'm sure they have left themselves that opening, but that would be very challenging.
Okay. So they've decided that, you know, they can't delete the archive from the sphere. So they've got to come up with a new plan. And this is complicated. And it's kind of Spock who sets them on this path by saying that, you know, perhaps Dr. Burnham is going about this all wrong. She's trying to deal with the control itself, you know, perhaps, or destroy the archive. You know, perhaps we got to come up with some other way, you know, and the variables are time and Earth and all the other things. So that gets everyone's mental wheel spinning, and they decide what they're going to do. And this conversation included Stamets, is that that suit has enough memory that they could download the entire archive to it and then send it into this wormhole that it travels through and essentially leave it there. But at the same time, they're going to beam Dr. Burnham out of this alternate time phase cycle that's in that keeps her bouncing back to the future, and she'll then be in the present time. It gets complicated, but it's the, you know, but they said, you know, they didn't have enough power for that. But then Stamets points out, well, we still have all this black matter on board, which would do the trick, which have enough power. And so they're going forward with that.
Yeah. This was the, you know, we can have our, you know, cake and eat it too kind of plan that first of all, I didn't truly understand it, because is the anchor to Gabrielle or is it to the suit or yes, which seemed to be the answer.
Yeah, honestly, I think it seemed to be both, that she went forward in time, she got knocked out of the sequence with our current timeline, and that's what kept snapping her back.
Right.
Right.
And then the idea that control, so if you put the probe data into the suit and sent it 950 years in the future, then control could never develop, and so then...
Well, see, I took it as to be they were going to put it into the wormhole and it was never going to leave the wormhole, because as Stamets described it, it would be in perpetual infinity at that
point. Right. So
it's unreachable by anyone.
Unreachable by anyone.
At that point. It's not just 950 years in the future. It's in the wormhole. You cannot get to it.
Okay. So that was what Spock was talking about, the time river. There were so many metaphors about what time was and what time was doing and what time thought and what time felt. That I was getting a little annoyed.
Yeah, I can tell.
It was a river. It was savage. It always wins. It's unwritten. It's malleable. I was like,
So Leland gets wind of this, and of course, you know, he's Control Leland, as you so dubbed
Control
him.
Leland.
And he's basically decided, well, Ash has failed in this, so now he's turning Georgiou loose on the project. And he's trying to manipulate her by noting how she's essentially threatened by Dr. Burnham's arrival. It's a clever ploy, because they're both mother figures, but I don't think he understands Georgiou as well as he thinks he does.
Yeah.
And this leads to Georgiou then going down to the planet, knocking out all the observation cameras so that she can have a conversation with Gabrielle. Now, she did start off by putting the transmitter there that's going to intercept the transmission of the sphere data to the Red Angel.
Yeah.
And so Section 31 is getting the data at first while the transmission starts. And they haven't actually told Gabrielle, the Discovery crew has not told Gabrielle that this is what they're doing.
She tells her that.
She sees the transmitter turn on nearby, so she knows something's happening. But then Georgiou shows up and tells her what's going on. And they kind of have it out where Gabrielle points out, it's like, you do care for Michael Burnham, you know, despite this Terran front that you're wearing here. And she does essentially get a promise of sorts out of Georgiou to look out for Michael going forward. Because you'll do things for the people you care for.
These were two very powerful women coming to a compromise about how, or not even maybe a compromise, but coming to an understanding about how things were going to be. I thought it was an amazingly well-acted scene.
Yeah, I liked it too. But then, Georgiou has the line that Gabrielle says, something to the effect of, you know, it's an unacceptable risk. She said it just the same way.
It was what Gabrielle says is that the AI sees her as an unacceptable risk to the larger mission, which is exactly what Control Leland had told Georgiou before Georgiou went down to, yeah.
Right. And so she has that, we see that memory of Leland saying that again. And so she contacts Ash and basically says, you're going to do what I say or I'm going to hunt you down.
Yeah. And Ash is trying to big dog back, which I thought was really funny. I was like, just take it, dude.
Well, he points out, it's like, look, I've been dead before. So yeah. But he does agree to work with Georgiou on this.
Yes.
It doesn't go well for him. He wanders into Leyland's ready room. And Leyland is sitting in a chair, and the nanites are kind of like assembled.
Rebuilding his face? What was
happening? They're sitting out on his face, and his eyes are black. And so,
not a good look.
At that point, the transmission's been cut off, and they get into a confrontation where Leyland again goes all Terminator, throws Ash through a window that's there, pulls him back out. And I'm not sure what he grabbed, but he stabs Ash in the gut.
Yes.
With that. And then goes about his business. Before Leland can get far, Ash contacts Discovery and basically, says, Leland, and collapses.
Right. The cavalry goes down to the planet.
Yeah. So Leland is now down there on the planet. And as you said, Burnham's arrived, Stamets, and Commander Nam, they're all there to carry out this mission of transmitting all the data to the Red Angel. And yeah, Leland goes full on Terminator to the point where he's taking blaster shots and they're healing like the T-1000 from Terminator 2.
Yeah. And I guess in the middle of a firefight, you don't really comment on that either. But it seemed like there wasn't even a whole lot of reaction to that.
Well, right. Like you said, the middle of a firefight, they have to stop him.
Right.
They don't realize at the moment that the information's being hijacked by Control. It's on Discovery that they figure that out.
Yeah.
Spock sees the console that the information is being intercepted and it starts to speed up.
Mm-hmm.
So not only is Control intercepting the data, it's now speeding up the process somehow. So it's kind of infiltrated the systems as well. What they end up doing is that when it looks like pretty much all is lost, Georgiou steps in. That doesn't prevent Leland from pulling out a phaser, blowing a hole through the Red Angel suit. Mm-hmm. And taking out the time crystal.
Yeah.
But then Georgiou is, cover the little one's ears. She's simply a badass. And she proves
she was
it again.
Awesome.
She's taken it to Leland. And then it's up to Stamets, Nam, and Burnham to destroy the black matter disks that are keeping the containment field up, which they do. Once that happens, the Red Angel suit gets snapped back into the future, and then Gabrielle right behind her.
Yeah.
And then Burnham, Stamets, Georgiou, and Nam get beamed back up to Discovery, which then torpedoes the site.
Yes.
Unfortunately, Leland has gotten away. He beams back up to the Section 31 ship, mm-hmm. and cloaks, not cloaks, but he hides their warp trail.
Yes.
And gets away. Which
speaking
is,
of getting away,
yeah.
Who else gets away? Ash gets away.
Yeah, he did get away. He did get out of the Section 131 ship in a, was a shuttle or a skate pod?
A skate pod.
Yeah, so he gets back to Discovery. So despite, I mean, he looked bad. So
yeah.
He had to be dragging himself into that escape pod to get away, but he did. So Burnham is in her quarters as this episode ends, still going through some of her mother's logs
mm-hmm.
when Spock shows up. I love the scene with Spock.
It was a good scene with Spock.
It felt like classic Spock. He did yes. not break down into emotion, but he managed to make logic comforting.
Yeah.
When he basically said that Dr. Burnham got it wrong, that the future is not written. You know, the past doesn't exist any longer because it's gone. The future hasn't been written yet. All they have is the now. And what they do now determines what's going to happen next. So they can still fix all of this, even though Control got away with 54% of the sphere's data.
Right.
And, you know, then he sets up the chess table and they start to play. And
mm-hmm.
it was another nice reconciliatory move after he smashed that chess table a couple episodes ago.
Yeah, they've definitely, Spock and Burnham are in a better place.
Right. And this is much more like the Spock that we know and love from the original series and the movies and
yeah.
everything else. So I was very happy with that part. But so I don't know. What do you think? You got any new theories or speculation about what's going on?
No. I do not. What about you? I wish I did.
Not really. I mean, like I said, it's the, I'm kind of fixated on, well, who's causing the red signals?
We are supposed to be fixated on that.
Yeah. I mean, there's another player or it is one of the existing players that just doesn't realize that they're doing it yet.
Yeah.
And this would require some going into the future to go back in the future. Again, or
I wouldn't be shocked if Spock sets them up for him.
Yeah, I'm also wondering if they aren't going to figure out at some point that if they get to one of these red signals in time, they'll actually run into Dr. Burnham, like from a previous attempt. Because it's not necessary that all of her trips to the past occurred literally. In a linear fashion. So like
sure.
mission one and then mission two happened at a time in the past after that, if that
right,
makes
but
sense.
Right, mission like 36 happened on a chronological timeline.
Before four.
Four,
yeah. And something like that. And so they may figure out, you know, where they can find her at some point and then help fix it that way.
Yeah.
But time travel's enough to make your mind spin. So question for you.
Okay.
I cannot recall a season of Star Trek, with the exception of maybe one of the seasons of Enterprise, that kind of had this ongoing mystery throughout an entire season. We've had season-long story arcs, but I don't remember anything that had reveals quite like this over the course of a full season.
No.
That you kind of had to piece together. I mean, you had major twists and developments over a course of a season, but I don't remember there being quite this figure it out, you know, a la Lost type thing.
I mean, Star Trek has always been so much more episodic.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in Deep Space Nine, you had the Dominion War and, you know, who was Odo and what were the founders? You know, you had those storylines. In Voyager, obviously getting home is not really a mystery that needs to get panned out. But, you know, that was more of the overarching, you know, there were a few episodes where you would get like, can Seven of Nine be trusted?
Yeah, but even then, it's like there's not a mystery yeah. behind it.
No, I mean, you didn't have, you know, in Deep Space Nine also had the Section 31 episodes. But no, there's never, to my memory, there's never been this level of mystery. Certainly one that has lasted this long.
Right. Well, that was my memory as well. So overall, what did you think of the episode?
You know, not much happens in the episode if you really think about it. It's a beautifully acted, very emotional episode if I think about it a whole lot, it's not going to hold up.
Hmm. There's a lot of scenes I liked.
Yeah.
And this one, I think, like I said earlier, I think this one finished in like 48, 50 minutes. And so there was a little bit of time to spare that I feel like they could have added a line of dialogue here or a line of dialogue there that would have clarified a few things that were going on. When you're dealing with time paradoxes, I think clarity is key. And yeah. that could have been helped out a little bit more, especially when they're describing this plan about sending the Red Angel into the wormhole. I mean, I had to watch this twice and pay careful attention before I fully got that. That's what they were doing on this. So that's my criticism. Overall, I really liked it. I loved the climax when Leland gets down to the planet and starts shooting at everything, and then they have to fight back.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they come up with a method for getting Dr. Burnham out of the containment field so she can go back to the future. And so he pointed out, it's like, you know, if she goes back to the future, she's going to be stuck there. But it's like, yeah, but at least she'll have a chance.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, if we don't, then she's going to get killed right here. So tough choices were made in this one. It was interesting to see Dr. Culber reinstated in this episode finally.
Yeah.
He seemed much, much more like the Culber we knew from season one.
And you know what I would have liked? Because he says something about how there's no way of knowing how much all the time traveling through time has changed Dr. Burnham.
Mm-hmm.
I would have really liked a scene with the two of them. It would have been weird because, like, he would be massively oversharing his story. But just sort of the having her talk about that aspect mm-hmm. of it. Because those two would understand what the other one was going through in a way no one else really would.
Sure.
But I think, like I said, I really like these characters, and because I like these characters, I really liked this episode, but not much happened, really, if you think about it.
Okay.
In terms, things happened in the story, but in terms of the overall plot of this season moving forward, not a lot happened.
Okay. I'm not certain that I entirely agree with that, because I feel like a major thing happened with the Time Stone and getting an answer as to why it was that Dr. Burnham was, you know, how she became this Red Angel. I think there was a lot of information revealed in this episode. There was a lot of discussion about motivation and someone who's experiencing this traumatic event of being the only person alive 950 years in the future and then having to come back to the present and deal with people, you know, after she's had 20 years largely to herself. You know, one of the things we kind of skipped over is that they did have that reconciliatory moment where, you know, she did tell Burnham about how she was there for all those important mm-hmm. moments in her life, which was a really nice moment. You know, it's, you know, when you were 11 years old and you read Alice in Wonderland, you know, out loud, and you pretended like you were reading it to your father and me. You know, when you graduated, when you first learned how to do the Vulcan salute, when you beamed aboard the Shenzhou, you know, she was always there. Curious how that worked. Was she peeking through the windows or something? Or, you know, when the creature found her on Vulcan. You know, the other thing is that she said, you know, she said something to the effect that she'd seen Burnham die 100 times mm-hmm. or whatever. And so, you know, she's kind of closed the book on that. And she is changing the future in that case. Because when we saw that first scene of several episodes ago where Burnham gets chased down by that creature that comes out of the ground.
Yeah.
It gets her.
Yeah.
And then we find out later that the Red Angel showed up to Spock and told him where Burnham was.
Mm-hmm.
And so effectively changed the past at that point. So it can be done. And so we don't quite have these, you know, that's kind of a break in the whole paradox thing. But I'm wondering if in an episode or two, we're not going to be looking back on this one and find out that if we paid closer attention, they gave us the tools for figuring out how the season was going to conclude.
That's possible. I also think Spock understanding that he was the only one who could understand the Red Angel.
And his dyslexia.
I mean, I don't think he was super thrilled to bits about that, but I think that understanding helped him with his relationship with Michael.
Yeah. And I guess we didn't give that scene enough attention either, because he's looking through the logs and finds the part where Dr. Burnham is talking about how, you know, as half human, half Vulcan, his study of logic and his ability to understand emotion blended perfectly so that he could understand her. And then his dyslexia is what allowed him to comprehend the time travel consequences of all this. And so it is, I mean, that is a rare set of factors.
Right. I think she says he might be the only person in the universe who can help me.
But, you know, and that had been bothering him. Why? Well, because he'd been trying to figure that out. Why would the Red Angel seek out him? And Stamets is what put him onto that a couple episodes.
Well, the interesting thing is, if you think about it, Spock knew those things were true.
Mm-hmm.
There was no more of it.
Yeah.
So I think it was probably somewhat reassuring for him that he was on the right track. He just hadn't, because he didn't know who the Red Angel was, he hadn't put all the pieces together.
Right. And then, you know, as Burnham pointed out, it's like, you know, this, you know, because he called it a human failing, and she pointed out, this is not a failing. You know, this is what allowed you, you know, to do everything that you've done. All right. Well, I think that then will wrap up our discussion of Perpetual Infinity. Before we go, Beth, why don't you let everyone know where they can find us on social media?
Oh, we can be reached on Twitter at Warp Trails. We're on Instagram and Facebook at Warp Trails Pod, and we can be reached by email at warptrails@retrozap.com.
And our show is part of the RetroZap Podcast Network. Head over to retrozap.com for other great podcasts covering everything from collecting video games, Dune, Game of Thrones, Star Wars, and a whole lot more, which includes my Star Wars podcast, Starship Sabers and Scoundrels, which I host with Dark Taxis and Jay Krebs. Our theme music is Wasp from Faces by Misha Dixon, and that is available on the Free Music Archive. So thanks for joining us, everyone. Live long and prosper, and we'll talk to you next time.
Hamlet. Hell yeah. Thank you.